Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are cracking open a historical work that's pretty ambitious, I'd say. It really challenges how many of us learned about South Asian history.
Definitely. We're diving into Joya Chatterjee's Shadows at Noon.
And that title alone, Shadows at Noon.
Yeah.
It signals we're not getting a simple story.
No, not at all. It points to a history marked by trauma, the incredibly violent birth of nations, and crises that went far beyond South Asia, actually reshaping global norms.
Okay, let's unpack this. Our mission today is really to dig into Chatterjee's central idea, which is quite radical.
Which is?
That the two huge violent moments, the 1947 partition and the 1971 Bangladesh Liberation War, aren't separate events.
Right. She sees them as connected.
Exactly.
Yep.
Intrinsically linked parts of one sort of long, brutal, and importantly, unfinished process.
And that perspective is crucial because it pushes past just, you know, lines on a map.
Mm-hmm.
Chatterjee makes us grapple with how this whole legacy of division keeps influencing things today.
Like what kind of things?
Well, everything from ongoing border disputes, controversial citizenship laws across the region, even the very idea of humanitarian intervention when the world can step in.
Okay, so let's talk about the historian herself, Joya Chatterjee. She's a distinguished historian at Cambridge.
That's right. And her real specialty is Bengal and partition studies.
What gives her work such authority?
It's her research method, I think. She doesn't just rely on, say, the English colonial archives.
It goes deeper.
Much deeper. She draws on multilingual sources, Bengali, Hindi, and English. And that lets her connect the big picture, the high-level diplomacy, with what was actually happening on the ground, the lived experience.
And her distinctive angle is challenging that traditional high politics narrative.
Exactly. You know, the standard textbook story often focuses on the big names, Nehru, Jinnah, Mountbatten, sitting in rooms making deals.
The view from the top.
Right. Chatterjee says, no, that's not the whole picture. Partition wasn't just a deal struck by elites. It was this huge, messy social unraveling.
Driven by
grassroots movements, local militias, anxieties, grievances. It came from below as much as from above.
So here's where it gets really interesting, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
She frames 1947 not as this discrete event, but as a long, brutal, and unfinished process,
mm-hmm.
essentially calling it a protracted civil war. If it didn't just happen in 47, where does she trace the roots?
Well, she argues the long road to division starts way back in British colonial policy.
How so?
Things like the census, how they categorized people, and especially the introduction of separate electorates. These administrative tools essentially created and hardened religious categories as political identities.
Separate electorates. Remind us why they were so crucial.
Because they made religion the basis for political competition. You weren't just running for office. You were competing to represent your religious community against others.
So it baked division into the system.
It absolutely did. Long before Pakistan was even a firm political demand, this system was pitting communities against each other for power and resources.
Okay, so when the split finally happens, the violence that erupted wasn't just random chaos.
No, definitely not spontaneous, according to Chatterjee. This is a really crucial and chilling point she makes.
Which is?
That the violence was often organized. It was purposeful. A modern political tool.
A tool for what?
In some places, she uses stark terms like ethnic cleansing and even retributive genocide.
Retributive genocide.
Yeah.
It's a powerful claim. What does she mean in this context?
She means it wasn't just killing. It was systematic, targeted violence used by militias on, frankly, all sides. The goal was political, to forcibly create religiously homogenous areas.
To make the new borders a reality through terror.
Exactly. To engineer populations, maximize panic, and make people flee, effectively enforcing the partition lines through fear.
And a key part of her long process idea is that this violence wasn't uniform. It played very differently in Punjab versus Bengal.
Yes, this contrast is vital to her whole argument. In Punjab, the violence was incredibly intense, swift, and brutal.
A huge, rapid exchange of populations.
Pretty much. A near-complete two-way exchange in a relatively short, horrifying period. The region became homogenous much faster.
But Bengal, that was different.
Very different. The violence there was slower, more localized, grinding. It wasn't one massive, quick explosion.
It just dragged on.
It dragged on for years, even decades in some ways. Migration wasn't a sudden flood. It was this long, slow bleed. And that's why Chatterjee says partition wasn't over in 47. In Bengal, it remained this open wound.
And overseeing this catastrophe was the British withdrawal, done with almost unbelievable speed. Sir Cyril Ratcliffe becomes the symbol of this, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, can you imagine a lawyer with zero knowledge of India?
Given 5 weeks.
5 weeks. In the middle of summer, to draw lines that would cut through villages, fields, rivers, families.
That's almost farcical if it weren't so tragic.
It really is the ultimate symbol of, well, imperial arrogance and detachment. Just draw the line and leave the mess behind.
And deepening this trauma, Chatterjee really focuses on the role of gendered violence.
Yes, this is absolutely central. She argues women's bodies effectively became territory.
How so?
Mass rape, abduction, mutilation, these weren't random acts. They were strategic, used to humiliate the other community, to stake claims, to literally inscribe the new borders onto female bodies. It was violence with a clear political message.
But the trauma didn't end with the act itself. The state response.
Right. This is fascinating and deeply disturbing. The post-partition recovery operations, where states tried to forcibly return abducted women to their correct nation.
Against their will, often.
Often against their will. These women had sometimes rebuilt lives, even had children. Forcing them back inflicted a second trauma.
And what did that reveal about the new states?
It revealed their fundamentally patriarchal nature. Women weren't seen as individuals with agency, but as symbols of community honor. Like property that needed to be recovered for the nation's pride.
Which leads us to how these new nations, India and Pakistan, were actually formed. Not just at partition, but through it.
Precisely. She calls them enemy twins. Their very identities were forged in opposition to each other.
Defined by the other.
Completely. And the refugee wasn't just a temporary humanitarian issue. They became this permanent political category, someone to be managed, controlled, suspected, reinforcing that logic of division and insecurity embedded in the states from day one.
Okay, so that foundation of insecurity, that logic, it sets the stage for the next major rupture, 1971. Chatterjee calls this a brutal second partition.
Yes, and it serves as the ultimate tragic proof that the original premise of Pakistan that religion alone could bind a nation was flawed.
It couldn't overcome other differences.
It absolutely couldn't overcome deep linguistic, cultural, and especially economic divisions. The breakup of Pakistan in 71 showed the limits of religious nationalism as the sole foundation for a modern state.
What were the specific drivers tearing East and West Pakistan apart?
The core issue was what she and others call internal colonialism.
Meaning?
Meaning East Pakistan's resources, jute, tea, foreign exchange earnings were essentially used to fund West Pakistan's development.
While the East was left behind.
And politically marginalized. Bengalis were underrepresented in the army, in the civil service. Their language was suppressed in favor of Urdu. They were treated like a colony within their own country.
And then came a natural disaster that became a political catalyst.
The Bola cyclone in 1970, absolutely devastating. And the West Pakistani government's response was widely seen as slow, inadequate, indifferent.
It just laid bare the disconnect.
Completely. It destroyed any remaining legitimacy Islamabad had in Dhaka. That tragedy really fueled the final push from demanding autonomy to demanding outright independence.
The ensuing military crackdown, Operation Searchlight, triggered a massive refugee crisis, 10 million people fleeing to India. That must have completely overwhelmed existing international frameworks.
It did. And this is where Chatterjee offers a really key insight about international law. She calls the refugee camps laboratories of international law.
Laboratories. What does she mean by that?
Well, think about the traditional system, sometimes called the Westphalian system. The idea was that what a sovereign state did within its own borders was its own business.
Internal affairs or internal affairs.
Exactly. But when you have 10 million refugees pouring across a border because of state violence, that neat line between internal and international just dissolves.
The suffering spilled over.
Massively. The sheer scale forced the world to confront the inadequacy of existing norms. It pushed thinking towards ideas of humanitarian intervention, concepts that would later evolve into things like the responsibility to protect or RTP.
The idea that the international community does have a role when a state massively fails its own people.
Precisely. Even if it was debated and inconsistently applied, 1971 was a watershed moment in that thinking.
And the global reaction itself was complex, revealing Cold War politics.
Oh, absolutely. You had this stark paradox. The U.S., championing democracy, was backing Pakistan despite clear evidence of atrocities.
Why?
Cold War calculations. Pakistan was an ally against Soviet influence. It was a really cynical moment that shocked many.
But it also sparked something else.
It did. It galvanized what Chatterjee highlights as real South-South solidarity. Mm-hmm. Countries in the developing world, Yugoslavia, Egypt, Cuba, many others, came out strongly for Bangladesh.
Asserting their own agency.
Yes, asserting post-colonial autonomy, pushing back against being mere pawns in the U.S.-Soviet game.
Okay, so if we pull all this together, this long, painful history from 47 through 71 and beyond, what are the big takeaways from Chatterjee's work for us today?
I think the main message is that this history isn't simple, it isn't linear, and crucially, using only religious identity to build a modern state is fundamentally limited, even dangerous.
Because life is more complex than just one identity marker.
Exactly. These huge political crises rarely have one single cause. You need to look at economics, language, culture, historical grievances, the whole picture.
And this isn't just history, is it? She talks about the unfinished business of partition.
Absolutely. That logic of division, of defining us against them, it's still incredibly potent in South Asia. We see it in the ongoing tragedy of Kashmir. We see it reflected in discriminatory citizenship laws like India's CAA, which keep raising that toxic question, who truly belongs. This isn't just a memory. It shapes present-day politics.
Does her analysis offer anything for policymakers dealing with crises now?
I think it does. Her look at how India, for instance, navigated the 1971 crisis, balancing its own strategic interests with genuine humanitarian concerns, however imperfectly, offers a kind of case study.
A model, maybe.
Perhaps a complicated model for how regional powers might have to respond to today's crises, whether it's Myanmar or Syria or elsewhere, trying to act without necessarily triggering wider wars.
If there's one overarching idea from Shadows at Noon, maybe it's this. Those shadows are cast by a failure of political imagination.
That's a great way to put it. A failure by leaders, then and now, to see beyond their own immediate interests and prejudices.
And Chatterjee's great strength is bringing together the official records with the voices from below.
Yes, exactly. Combining the diplomatic cables with the testimonies of refugees, of women, of those usually silenced, it's a powerful reminder that history looks very different depending on whose story gets told.
So the provocative thought to leave with, if 1971 showed that things like regional identity and economic frustration could tear apart a state supposedly based on religious unity,
then what does that imply for the future? For the stability and political shape of the entire South Asian subcontinent today, where those same tensions still exist?
That is indeed the question Chatterjee leaves us with. A really challenging thought.
A lot to mull over.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.